across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning and welcome back. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Friday morning, May the 17th, 2024. One more week till Memorial Day weekend. Nice to have you here. As always, a very busy hour ahead. Dan Schumacher is going to help us talk about sports. The Brewers starting their longest road trip of the season, along with Mark Jacob from Chicago, talking about media coverage of the week's big stories. He's joined by another Chicago News veteran, Jennifer Schultz, will join us as well. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is along to preview his Amicus show tomorrow morning, heard across the Civic Media Radio Network. Being a former U.S. attorney, he's got great insight into the Trump hush money trial that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. And, of course, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here as well. On a gorgeous morning here on Lake Wissota, it was really foggy an hour ago. It has lifted here, and it's just a sunny, great start to the day. Brittany, how are things looking for the weekend around the state?
Yeah, so across the state right now, it's a mix of either you're under some dense fog still, or you've got the sunshine bright and beautiful. If you're still under the fog, you've got about 30, 35 so minutes. I feel like that sun is pretty bright. It should burn it off. And those winds are starting to move a little bit more. So we got the fog because the warmer temperatures are moving in today. The winds calmed, the skies cleared, and everything is looking fantastic for this weekend. Now there are some spots that could see some scattered showers and storms. I'm going to time those out for you right now. So temperatures though, today and tomorrow, we're going to soar into the upper 70s to low 80s. I think tomorrow will be the warmest day. It's also going to be the windiest day as well, plus the highest chance of some scattered showers and storms. So tonight, there is a warm front that's going to push through northwest Wisconsin. We could see some spotty, isolated showers and storms, nothing strong, nothing severe. But do understand there's going to be a chance for a rain tonight up at northwest Wisconsin. Otherwise, the rest of the state, tomorrow evening, you know, those kind of summer pop-up showers and storms that push through? Well, there's a front. The cold front is going to be moving through the state tomorrow night. So keep in mind that we could see a line of storms from that. Again, nothing should be strong or severe. It's a pretty weak front. That's why we haven't been talking about it much. But I do think with the heat that we're getting and the nice temperatures, I think we're going to have some instability to fire some up. Other than that, though, Sunday, still fantastic, beautiful. Enjoy it, because next week, the start of next week, is going to be a wet one. We are going to be soaked with heavy rain, showers, and storms.
Where again, we engage in the bargaining that comes with a holiday weekend, where we say things like, well, okay, as long as it gets it out of its system by Memorial Day weekend, which we don't know yet, but that's the trade-off we're going to pretend is happening here.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm thinking and hoping. Fingers crossed.
Also, you don't have to give us the bad news every time. You can be like, well, talk about it on Monday. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
No. She's full service here.
I have to let you know, because if you let the weekend slip away and you're inside doing things, now hold off to Monday and Tuesday to do those inside chores.
Okay. Yes, because this weekend, parts of this weekend are going to be, and I want to spell this word correctly for folks that I'm about to use, N-O-Y-C-E. Noise.
It's noise. Just noise. Oh, I spell it N-O-I-C-E. That's interesting.
Isn't that noise? No, that's an O-I-C-E.
No, that's not.
Anyway, Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny and 48 degrees, dense fog. And that Gene Smart song we played earlier, Mr. Big Stuff, he says, my mom always had the term, when I was naughty as a kid, Mr. Who Do You Think You Are? I like that mom was using.
Did she sing it to you?
I doubt it. It's, okay. He said she had the term, Mr., who do you think you are?
Yeah.
So, you know. And Alicia noting Top Gun was a heck of a recruiting tool by the Navy. And again, just – by the way, we had some of those F-35s up here in the Chippewa Valley day before yesterday. Oh, they get your attention, don't they?
Oh, yes.
You hear them mostly around Madison, of course, near where they're based. But when they go on training missions around the state, it's like, oh, guess who's here?
You know? Yeah.
And good weather for it. Brittany, have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you, guys.
Monday on the program, we're going to have State Senate Democratic Leader Dianne Hesselbein will be here to talk about what is now the completion of the legislative session, because Senate Republicans met last week and tried to override some of Governor Evers' vetoes. That will ultimately be unsuccessful. And so Senator Hesselbein will talk about that and the fact that, real feather in her cap, she has recruited, well, she and her team have recruited candidates in every state Senate district where there's a race. So there's no race where a Republican would go unchallenged. And so she'll talk about the campaign coming up. That's on Monday. On Tuesday, we'll talk to Matt Rothschild, recently retired from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, but is still staying active, including a podcast series that he's starting to put together in partnership with Civic Media. In the Up North News daily newsletter, and you can get that from upnorthnewswi.com, a little quick pop quiz for Mr. Bach here. There is a website, I want to get it right here, Stadium Talk, is out with a list it put together of the 31 greatest baseball announcers of all time. And of the 31 greatest baseball announcers of all time, two of them are on the list. Of course, you can guess the one. That would be Mr. Uecker.
Bob Uecker. Yeah.
Bob Uecker. But can you guess which other, in all the history of Brewers broadcasting, who would be that other one of the greatest play-by-play baseball announcers of all time?
Of the Brewers?
Of the Brewers.
You?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Let me back up. Of Major League Baseball.
Oh.
But he has Wisconsin ties. Put it that way.
I want to say Vin Scully, but I don't think that's true.
No. Think about he's best known on this side of the St. Croix for calling Packers games. He called Super Bowls 1 and 2.
Ray.
Ray Scott.
Way off. I was way off. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, folks. I'm not good at this.
Ray Scott, and the reason for my initial confusion is he wasn't a Brewers, he was a Minnesota Twins announcer as well.
Nobody's perfect.
For quite some time, but he was also a longtime Green Bay Packers announcer. Anyway, in the newsletter is more about that particular list. It includes some folks like, of all the baseball players who've moved to the broadcast booth, don't hold me to this, the list includes Tim McCarver, mm-hmm. who is outstanding. I don't believe that it includes Jim Cott, who, if so, that would be an oversight, because I think he's just one of the greats as well. And I wanted to mention, John Miller, who used to do Sunday Night Baseball for ESPN for many, many years.
Yeah.
And still calls the games for the San Francisco Giants. It's just wonderful. So if any of you want to make note of somebody that you would put on that list of best ever baseball announcers, you can call or text the program here at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, or you can use the Civic Media app. The chair recognizes Mr. Bach from Waukesha.
Do you know a lot about baseball announcing? Because I have a very simple, which would actually sound like a dumb question.
I'll give it my best.
When baseball announcers are watching a game, mm-hmm. how do they know the pitch that the pitcher is throwing?
Oh, that's a great question.
And that's a change. I'm like, how'd you know? You're like 150 feet away and you don't see the signal. Like, I feel so dumb as a baseball fan not knowing that when I'm listening to a game, like there's a changeup or a fastball. I'm like, huh, what?
There is, and I'm just doing a quick Google to see what else can back me up on this. The short answer is what you would basically call weapons of war. There are so many things developed for the military mm-hmm. that then have civilian use.
Yeah.
And there's basically, you had radar that measured the speed of a baseball.
Yeah.
That was it. But now it's so detailed and can detect spin. It can detect rotation, how many rotations, the curve of it and everything yeah. else. And then that's matched up to the way that something works, a slider, a knuckleball, whatever. The whole reason it is a slider is it has a particular rotation. It has a particular curve. And the radar, it's probably not called a radar. That's what I was trying to look up here quickly, can detect that because it had to detect like incoming fire from, yeah. From enemy artillery or whatever the yeah. case may be. And now they apply that to sports.
So, okay, because I honestly...
Because before they'd say, oh, he threw a curve. And then I started hearing that because I was in the same camp as you initially. I'm like, how do you know that's a four-seamer? You can't see, cannot see the stitches from here, from up there.
Yeah. I just thought these guys, and whomever is calling the game, I thought they were just so talented at what they were doing. They were like, oh, definitely a screwball. I'm like,
I mean, they can definitely do that to a degree. They're certainly better than, you know, the average guy on the street. But yeah, they're getting a little bit more help in detecting it. But that's part of why I liked Tim McCarver as a catcher, Jim Cott as a pitcher, because they would watch, you know, the release point where they let go of the ball is important and things like that. And it's what, again, I know a lot of people think baseball is boring, but for folks who are fans of it, it's all that little minutia that makes it such an interesting game.
I will never accept nor understand the argument that baseball is boring. It's just not. No. It's just, it's you have to have a level of patience for that game.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I would be on golf. I find golf to be, you know, boring and I don't follow it. But for people who do, I totally understand. I listen to people, they also talk about, you know, rotation and angle and your arm should be like this. And if that's what you're interested in, I get that entirely. It's just not my cup of tea.
It's a weird thing to say, but I find basketball very boring because after a while, all I hear is squeak, 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 running, running, running. It just becomes one.
Squeak, squeak, swoosh. Squeak,
yeah, exactly. Squeak, so for me, it's not exciting to watch because you're just like going back and forth, back and forth. I'm like, all right, I'd rather watch baseball or tennis.
But I'm glad you mentioned basketball because it gives me a chance to mention in the NBA playoffs.
Segway.
The Minnesota Timberwolves did win last night, beating the Denver Nuggets, forcing a game seven. But they were this close to being eliminated after having gone up 2-0 against Denver by winning the first two games in Denver. So everybody thought, wow, the Timberwolves are going to sweep. No, Denver came back and won the next three and were on the verge of eliminating the Wolves. And there were some great memes going around of Minnesota Vikings fans teasing Timberwolves fans who were about to get their hearts stomped on and looking at the Vikings fans like, you know, is this your first time? And the Vikings fans like, no, I've been here. I've been here many times. And so we'll see on Sunday if the Wolves advance or if they pull a Vikings, basically. The Brewers are on a road trip starting tonight. They are in Houston for three games. Freddie Peralta pitching tonight, pregame at 6:35 on some of your favorite civic media stations. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel tells us more about Supreme Court decisions and also the latest in the Trump hush money trial and more. All ahead, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Send lawyers, guns, and money.
There are not just the Trump hush money trial, not just one trial, but four legal cases that we're going to cover in the next couple of minutes here with our friend, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, who's now going to give us first, before any of those cases, a lesson in Latin. Because I had that mental block for a moment when I was getting set to tease the show last hour of whether I'm supposed to say he is the host of Amicus, a law review, or Amicus, a law review. So, Mr. Santel, good morning. Set us straight on the Latin language and law.
A language is always a good thing early in the morning to start your Friday off with. And I will tell you, Pat, that I have heard attorneys and non-attorneys who are much more learned than I say it in both directions.
Okay.
I think the accepted is amicus with the emphasis on the first syllable, as we often say. But anything is acceptable. And even just the weekend show is sufficient as well to identify what we do.
That's true. That does work Saturdays from 9 to 11 live and then played back on Sunday mornings in the same time period across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jim Santel, he puts the cuss in amicus. And but without cussing, we're going to cover these four quick topics here. We'll save the Trump trial for a little bit here. There were two significant U.S. Supreme Court decisions on Thursday, one involving voting rights in Louisiana. And we talked briefly with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil in our last hour about the other one, upholding the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that thing that Sean Duffy and other Republicans tried to kill for so many years. And Jim, I introduce it by saying this. The decision was 7-2,
And it was written by somebody very surprising. If you're getting this guy to write your decision, knocking down a conservative lawsuit, you right. brought the wrong lawsuit.
Absolutely. And the tea leaves coming out of the oral argument suggested that the Supreme Court was not going to buy into this challenge. So it wasn't a great surprise, unlike some other cases in this area that are going to probably go in the opposite direction. But yes, you've got Clarence Thomas, not exactly the bastion of expansive government and agency discretion, those kinds of things, who's writing a very forceful and clear opinion saying, you know what, we are rejecting this notion that the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, put in place to ensure that the rules and regulations and even decisions of the financial community are supportive of consumers. And finding that institution is in fact validly put together, the issue is whether its funding source, that is through the Federal Reserve and not through congressional appropriations, whether that was a basis for attacking it. Court basically said, nope, that's just fine. Many other institutions also, including the Federal Reserve, do not get their money through the appropriations process. No problem here, definitively saying we're okay going forward. A sigh of relief from the CFPB people, but also other agencies who were thinking, yes. looking at this very closely and saying, gee, Supreme right. Court goes in the opposite direction on this one. We're in trouble also because we too are not funded by the appropriations process.
Let's go to the voting rights case in Louisiana. What was the victory there?
Sure. So this has to do with, again, Voting Rights Act, the Supreme Court taking up a number of these cases last year. Again, a bit of a surprise in Alabama, finding kind of the same sort of thing that the Alabama legislature and others there had drawn maps in a way that disenfranchised a significant portion of the Black community. And here again, the Supreme Court Voting Rights Act finding, this time in Louisiana, 6 congressional districts, approximately a third of the state population is Black. And so you'd anticipate very roughly that about 2 of the 6 would be majority Black opportunity districts, where members of our Black community would have an opportunity to select people of their choice. And the drawing of the maps establishes just 1, goes up and down a little bit. It's a bit of a procedural, not history here, but a little complicated. In the end, yesterday, the Supreme Court lets stand a lower court decision that permits the maps to be drawn. So there are 2 of the 6 that are majority Black opportunity districts. It is viewed as a win for voting rights advocates, I would say for all of us. The only wrinkle in it is, interesting, you get dissents from the liberals on the court just because of the timing on this and the way in which the maps are drawn. Very, very serpentine, thus giving rise to the Mander part of gerrymandering, if you will, and the concern that maybe down the road they will be attacked based upon that. So we probably haven't heard the last of Louisiana, but for now, going ahead in the November election, 2 of the districts will be majority Black opportunity districts, which is a good thing.
Very good. If time allows, we'll get to the Attorney General and the President and executive privilege on Republicans in the House trying to get audio tape from the Special Counsel Robert Hur investigation, but I don't want to lose out on time to hit the Trump criminal fraud trial. A lot of time on the stand for Michael Cohen, Trump's former attorney. Still not done with cross-examination. They're going to pick that thing up on Monday. Is that significant? Because I'll just say again, I'm not following it nearly as closely as you are. It seems like Trump's attorneys are keeping him up there longer than expected, hoping to finally start scoring some points, and I don't know that it's necessarily working, but that's my very amateur view of it. What's yours?
It's not an amateur view, Pat, at all. It's a professional view, and I'd offer it's the right view, too. This is a quarter of the process that we have in any trial, including civil trials, criminal trials. You test the veracity of witnesses. Is their perception accurate? Is their memory accurate? Are they credible generally? And that's the big deal. The reason why he's up there a lot is because Michael Cohen, as we have talked on this wonderful broadcast before, he's got a lot of baggage with a capital B, right? And so a lot of things here, including the fact that he has lied under oath to many, many people out there, and including Congress, including investigators, lots of things to investigate here on the stand to suggest that he is not a credible witness, alleging that he has made up this story generally. Difficult to do. I think you're also right, just because there's so much corroboration around the story from the other witnesses who are credible, the Hope Hicks of the world and the lawyer, if you will, and even David Pecker, who support what he is saying, even though, again, the attack on him is a part of our process, and the jury should hear that just to determine whether or not this man, who has lied a lot of reasons not to like him, not to believe him, to dismiss him as a human being and a lawyer, if you will, but in this case, probably telling the truth. It continues on Monday for just that purpose.
Well, again, if somebody has lied on behalf of somebody else for years and years, I mean, if that person eventually wants to tell the truth at some point, yeah, it might be tough to believe them. But the alternative is, well, you're never going to get to that person at the top because you won't believe what that person says. So you got to have evidence around with it as well, not just Michael Cohen's word. What do you make of the documentary evidence that's being presented alongside this?
Yeah, pretty strong. And it really does support what he is saying. And to your point, it does go to the notion that, yes, he says, I'm coming forward to right the wrongs of my past and all this history, which, again, I think is a fairly compelling thing to say. I recognize now that I have been lying all this period of time. And the documents, the recordings that he's got, the telephone toll records, the financial things, all of that support this story, as do everybody else. And it makes it tough to do a really knockout cross-examination. I think you're right. They're not there. Likely this case will go to the jury sometime next week when we get together next Friday. We'll see if the jury is deliberating. Could even have a verdict fairly soon. Again, assuming the defense doesn't put on a case, they always could, not obliged to do so under our system.
And I don't think for a moment Trump is testifying, but that's going to be part of next week. So, Jim, we'll also talk about the special counsel, Robert Hur, transcript and executive privilege, all that and more on his show, Amicus, A Law Review, starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Jim Santel, thank you so much.
Had always a pleasure to be with you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much. You take care as well. Have a great weekend. Coming up next, we're going to have Mark Jacob, and our friend Jennifer Scholes is going to join us as well. First, the Midwest Farm Report. You're up north.
Lawyers, guns, and money.
Was on this day in 1975, Earth, Wind, and Fire topped the chart with their sixth album, That's the Way of the World. Title cut from there as we continue on just about 7:35 on this Friday morning, where we normally talk to Mark Jacob, our friend from Chicago, about how the media has covered the big stories of the week. But this is not a normal week, because I have to admit, Mark Jacob is not the only person whose social media posts on this topic I enjoy so much. And yet, when I told him about somebody else I admired, it turned out I was not cheating on him. Jennifer Scholes is a friend of Mark's.
And so
she's here with us as well. Mark, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. It turns out that this other person who's putting up all these cool posts is what, another Chicago News veteran?
I am a Chicago News veteran, yes. I work in Chicago TV mostly. For 20 plus years, with a few stints in Seattle and downstate Illinois, but mostly Chicago. Yep.
That's so great. I appreciate that. Mark, you can vouch for her.
Many of you have heard the station she directed the news for, which is WGN.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yes. A few people have heard of it here and there, especially when it was up on the super satellite or whatever. Everybody got to see our news product.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, what prompted me to reach out and want you to visit with us this week is a subject that Mark and I have talked about at length, but you wrote about because of this week's events, getting the Trump and Biden campaigns to agree on debates. And they've bypassed the commission, and in President Biden's letter outlining why they're bypassing the commission, I agreed with so much of it, and so much of it is also in your opinion column, which you can find at heartlandsignal.com. The headline is "More Facts, Less Chaos, 7 Ways to Make a Biden-Trump Debate Better." So, Mark, if you don't mind, instead of our usual caterwauling, we're going to ask Jennifer to weigh in first. If when this takes place, how do we do debates in this era of politics, however nauseating it happens to be at times?
Well, I think the first thing everybody
wants to acknowledge, should acknowledge, is that nothing is normal. Like we have been, we continue to be in a stage, not just with politics, but media, where none of it's normal. So the rules that we have been accustomed to just don't apply. We know that. I mean, look at those 2020 debates. I will say that my initial feeling was that there should not be debates. I think we will have a convicted criminal as one of the leading candidates. And I felt strongly, and I still do, that I'm not sure that giving someone like that a platform that seems to say, well, look, we're doing a normal thing. It's presidential debates and here we are, but he's not normal. There's nothing about his campaign that's normal. There was nothing about his governance that was normal. And so I was not a fan of the debates. That said, a couple of weeks ago, as you could see, we were running down the track towards debates. I started thinking about, well, if I was in charge, what would I do differently? So the piece you're referencing, Pat, I actually wrote it before they agreed to the debates, with just some ideas that, hey, it didn't work so well the last time. And one of the things I thought that didn't work so well, and the Biden administration agrees, is that the debate commission was a complete failure. Let's not forget that in that very first debate, there were rules that if you were participating and your entourage as well, everyone had to be tested by the Cleveland Clinic for COVID. The Trump campaign, Trump himself, all arrived minutes. They arrived too late to get a proper test, so they weren't tested. We now know he and others in his group all had COVID. The fact that the debate commission 4 years ago was unable to do what I think is a pretty simple thing. Here's a rule. Everybody's going to abide by it. And then we'll do the debates. And that they failed at that is, I think, all we need to know, that they just weren't the ones to continue to have debates. So my suggestion was, hey, let's go back to the League of Women Voters. Yes. You know, they know how to do a debate. I don't know why they ever got out of it in the first place. And they are not going to be involved this time either. But I thought that was a good idea.
Well, what happened was they were villainized by Republicans because, again, in their mind, you know, this level playing field is somehow biased. If you call everything a liberal plot, and the League of Women Voters has been a real victim in that. Mark, we've talked at length about some of these things. We haven't mentioned putting League of Women Voters in charge, which is a great idea. Journalists only. Oh, my God, how many times we've talked about a mute button, how nice that would be. But let's come down to the one about, you know, no studio audience, because where I think the commission really lost, you know, the Biden campaign, knowing the Trump campaign would love a loud, raucous audience. And you and I have discussed there is just, in my mind, no place for that if you're debating serious issues.
No, it's, you know, it's more a Trump as a carny barker, as somebody who's just trying to, you know, rile up people and get hooting and hollering and just turn it into a show. And when you have just two people and the moderator there, it puts more, you know, Trump can't like throw it to the audience. He can't like, you know, he can't play to the audience. He's got to actually play to the facts a little bit more. And that's where he's got big problems. And so I'm with Jennifer that I think there was no need for any debates because frankly, I think we know the candidates so well and what they stand for, that I felt like the push for debates was more a push by the TV networks to have entertainment, you know, yes, to have a show that they could do. But if you're going to have them, you know, definitely. To me, the number one thing is don't have a studio audience. Just have two people plus a moderator. And the moderator has got to be able to hit the mute button when somebody goes over, or when, like, Trump, you know, remember the last time Trump just, you know, there was the Biden shut up man moment because I think we all related to it, or many of us did, because Trump was interrupting every sentence that he uttered.
It wasn't a debate.
You can't have that. I mean, Jennifer's totally right. You got to have rules, and you got to You got to follow them. You can't just have rules and pretend you have rules and not follow them.
And I will say as well, as I've said before, in my mind, I would put them in soundproof booths, you know, and literally cut their mics off and they'd be completely silent. The only reason they don't do that is I think they both rightly fear that the booth might be filled with water and they drop a shark in there. But one last one, then we'll move on to another topic. But Jennifer, we've talked about this one as well. The note of it being almost live, and that you can then go through some fact checking. And again, the tongue in cheek analogy I use is pop-up videos, the old thing from VH1, and have something pop up that says this is not true, this is the actual thing, and you think some version of that instead of live. Just doesn't have to be
right. And I think live in this era we're living in is the enemy of truth, really, because the lies come so fast, so furious, that really I'm not sure anybody can keep up with it. And so if you can't, then there are other options available. And one of those is doing it live, what we call live on tape. So they record it and then they have the opportunity to go back and edit it and add other things to it. They are not going to do that, however. So I would hope that they would have at the ready clips of things that candidates have said previously to be able to say, wait a second, you just said this and you denied that you said that, but here's the tape. Let's go to the videotape. I think the videotape is always a good fact checker on its own. CNN has proven in some more recent interviews that they know that that's a powerful thing and that they know how to have it at the ready, even in a live interview. I would hope that they would consider doing something similar. My guess is that they won't. My guess is that they will just do two moderators, two candidates, and all talking. But if they really wanted to be aggressive about fact checking, they would have videos ready to go saying, well, you said this last week. Or they would also have full screen graphics saying, but in 2020, you said this. That's not hard to do. It's not hard to be that prepared. My fear, though, is that they won't make that effort.
No, they won't. I would love to have that. And if I were there, I'd say, let's go to the Tim Russert videotape machine, because Tim Russert showed you could do your homework ahead of time and have the evidence ready when they tell a lie, essentially. Jennifer, you and Mark and Dan Frumkin and others rightly pointed out yesterday, and I saw it about an hour after the stock market closed, pointed out that the Dow Industrials had topped 40,000 for the first time. And Dan Frumkin of PressWatchers.org posted, this story is literally nowhere on the Washington Post or New York Times homepages. But the Wall Street Journal, of course, it being a business story, big headline, big graph about it. And Jennifer, you wrote, this is journalism malpractice. What I could have excused it for a little while, but an hour later to still have nothing there. And then what few outlets I did see mention it were completely poo-pooing it. Like, that's there, but it's not a big deal. That's so different than how I think they would have handled it under a Republican administration.
Yes. And what was interesting to me, I went back and looked to see, for example, with the New York Times, did they update their story? I could not find a story of any kind about what happened on the stock market, the historic thing, you know, hitting 40,000. They didn't cover it at all, even like 5 or 6 hours after it happened. I do think, whether they want to admit it or not, especially the Times, there is a bit of a bias against the Biden administration when it comes to the economy. Mark and I have talked about this before, that there's if they cover it, there's always the yes, but type of headline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, economy soars, but will it hurt Biden? Yes. You know,
they like the future is uncertain, as if the future hasn't always been uncertain.
Right.
You know, as if this is a new thing that Biden did, his economy is looking good, so the future's uncertain. You know, it's silly talk. And you have to wonder also whether, I just feel like the New York Times is mad at Biden for not giving him an interview and is taking it out on him. I mean, there's another Biden story on their homepage today about, well, the polls show really bad stuff. And they're just they're doing that poll and they're just carving it every way to make Biden look bad, I think.
Oh, gosh, without a doubt. And by the way, one more thing on taking things live or not. I couldn't help but notice that now with the trial going on in Manhattan that I was flipping around. And of course, both CNN and MSNBC have figured out not to air live what all the stuff that spews out of Trump as he's going into court. Mm-hmm. Went over to Fox, you know, quote unquote news. They're carrying the whole thing like it's a campaign route because he basically is increasingly just giving his campaign speech.
Yes.
On government property. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing not to give that the oxygen that he so craves. Mark, I want to close with a post that you put up about a radical group and a radical document that they put out that I think people aren't aware of when they look at, you know, politics in this day and age. You mentioned that this group called for doubling immigration, cracking down on polluters, and leaning on businesses to engage in fair hiring. What was this group and what was this radical document that you pulled out of the history books?
Well, yeah, I found something in way back in 1960, there was a group called the Republican Party. And they issued a very detailed platform of what they believed in. And as you would know, this was the end of the Eisenhower administration, which was, you know, quite centrist and was, you know, trying to, you know, attract, you know, a wide variety of followers. And when you look at their platform, it's, you know, very centrist and very reasonable, you know, talks about how they want to raise the minimum wage, talks about, I mean, all this stuff that they don't agree with anymore. And so I did a thread on Twitter about that at MarkJacob16 is my handle. And it, you know, went through it all. And it reminds you that in the 1960s, the Republican Party took a very dangerous, sad turn with a Southern strategy where they started, you know, looking for, you know, to the segregation crowd they wanted to attract, you know, and then you have Nixon and him committing massive crimes in order to try to stay in office. And
it was such a turn, just almost criminal. And we should mention as well, speaking of handles, you can find Jennifer Schulze on Twitter @NewsJennifer. And it's so great to have you here. Thank you for visiting with us today and can't wait to do it again.
Yes.
Have a great weekend to you, Mark, as well. Dan Schumacher is coming up next. You're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I've been balling a shiny black steel jackhammer, been chipping up rocks for the great highway.
Little big time.
All right. But it's Friday morning. It's 7:51. Dan Schumacher is here, and so is Greg Bach, and so are the Grateful Dead. What do we got today here, guys?
That was Jack Ball, right? Jack Ball Killer from Big Ben?
That was Easy Wind.
Oh, Easy Wind. Sorry, I didn't know which one it was. They both have the same kind of beat. The Grateful Dead started last night their 24-date residency at the Sphere in Vegas.
I thought they were retired. I thought they were done as of Soldier Field and Trey from Fish came in and played Jerry's parts. And
oh,
no
I'm
band,
sorry. Do they still pay you money? Do they still pay you money for coming out of retirement? They do, don't they? Well, okay.
It's Dead and Company, man, with John Mayer and all that kind of stuff. So they rocked it last night.
Yeah. Are you going? All right. No comment to the press.
The
all right.
witness is excused. So Brewers are off. They start a 9-game road trip in Houston tonight. Freddie Peralta on the mound for the Houston series this weekend. But we start with breaking sports news that Dan told us about during the break from ESPN and many other news services. World number one golfer Scottie Scheffler was arrested by Louisiana Metro Police Friday morning after trying to drive into the entrance of Valhalla Golf Club, the site of this week's PGA Championship. Traffic outside the course had been stopped after a man was struck and killed by a shuttle bus around 5 a.m. local time. Scheffler faces charges of second-degree assault of a police officer, third-degree criminal mischief, reckless driving, and disregarding traffic signals from an officer directing traffic. According to an ESPN reporter who witnessed the incident, Scheffler was trying to drive around the crash scene on a median. A police officer instructed Scheffler to stop, but Scheffler continued to drive about 10-20 yards toward the entrance. At one point, an officer attached himself to the side of Scheffler's car. Scheffler stopped his car as he turned into the entrance of Valhalla. After 20 to 30 seconds, Scheffler rolled down his window. The officer grabbed Scheffler's arm to pull him out of the vehicle. The officer reached inside to open the door, and once Scheffler was pulled out, he was pushed against the car and placed in handcuffs. Scheffler is the clubhouse leader at the PGA Championship right now, Dan.
He's driving a PGA car. So they, Jeff Darlington, the writer for ESPN, I just heard him on the news, was there and witnessed it all. They were letting other PGA vehicles through, letting them go around. Scheffler was just following that around as well, driving a PGA marked comp car that most of those pros get to go back and forth on their own from the hotel to the course. I think it's just ridiculous that this happened. I mean, the whole PGA event is now delayed for like 2 hours, and they just posted a mugshot of him. He got booked and put in a yellow jumpsuit.
It's really something. As Scheffler is being led away, he turned to the ESPN reporter and said, "Can you help?" The officer told the reporter to back away. "You need to get out of the way," the officer said. "Right now he's going to jail, and there's nothing you can do about it." And look, as much as my default is, you know, don't go around, accident scenes, do not just disregard, police instructions because you're a celebrity or you're in a hurry. It sounds like, from what you're telling me, that he's going to have some kind of a defense that he, was singled out where his other cars were waved through.
That's correct. That's the way Jeff Darlington, the reporter from ESPN, posed it on the TV.
It is that's really something. So needless to say, Craig, we just got done saying golf is boring.
I know. This is the most exciting golf has ever been for me.
We're going to, and it's sad that it had to come with
us. Guess who bailed him out, though? The joke on online I knew.
John Daly.
Tiger Woods. Oh. Tiger Woods went and bailed him out.
Ah, darn it. The ghost of Jack Palmer. Is he dead or no?
Jack Palmer?
John Palmer? I mean,
Shuffler's about his mild
manner. Arnold Palmer?
Oh, there it is. Gotcha.
Jack
okay.
Nicholas? Okay. It's all just kind of melding together here. Yep. So we've mentioned the Brewers are getting their road trip underway. I haven't looked up the Cubs. I don't know what your Cubs are up to these days.
We're down two games to you right now. We lost last night 5-4, a nail biter. We had a chance to win in the bottom of the ninth with two guys on. The Cubs choked and lost 5-4 to Pittsburgh.
I have not watched the full thing, but I've been watching the schedule reveals for the football teams. The Packers have a really cool retro-looking one that I have to finish watching. This has really become a thing. I mean, do you watch these now with the same interest that more people are? These schedule reveals? Again, everything's a production. We got to make it an event, or we got to make it a highly produced video. And that's right. How we announce ourselves. We don't just say, "Here's the schedule."
You should check out the Chargers one.
Chargers always have a funny one. So I'm going to go back and watch that this weekend to figure out where they're playing.
What do you think the NFL did with the schedule this year? Who's the first primetime game they're putting on?
I give up. Who?
Week one, the Battle of the Harbaughs. Okay. John and Jim. San Diego versus the Ravens is the first primetime game of the year. So
then
Buffalo and Kansas City play the same weekend, ironically, that Taylor Swift is in Toronto.
They're trying to
get some play out of that, apparently. I don't know how.
Can we somehow get Taylor Swift in Brazil, or that's where the Packers are opening up, right? Can we?
We need to
get a celebrity there, maybe. I don't know.
I think the Packers and the Bears, they both play on holidays too. They play on Thanksgiving and the same day. I think it's Packers. I forget who they play on Thanksgiving, but the Bears play somebody on Thanksgiving, and then there's the Packers play the Dolphins, I think, on Thanksgiving, don't they?
We don't play the Bears until mid-November this year.
I saw that. Not till the 24th.
Yeah, it's very, very. Yeah. And then we play. The end of the season. That's our last game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that's always the flex game. And it seems like it's always the Bears or the Vikings. I suppose it's been Detroit sometimes as well. But how do you like the? And again, I'm artificially inflating it. But the fact that the three divisional games at Lambeau Field this year are all for the gold package holders who come up from Milwaukee for the game.
Sure.
Again, I think I'm just stirring the pot for
fun. And here I got rid of my conspiracy theory music for the show. Thanks a lot, Pat. All right.
You always have it handy.
It's we're a minute away from the show being ended. I got to wrap things up for Calvin coming in.
Okay. I'm done with my conspiracy here. It would have been nice, but all right. Look at your schedule release videos, everybody. There'll be a quiz on Monday. Dan, enjoy your. Are you in Ashland all weekend? Or are you back?
No,
in Chippewa?
I just arrived late last night from Chippewa.
All right, and then perhaps to undisclosed locations from questions he wouldn't answer earlier in the segment. But that's that's for another time. Dan, have a lovely weekend.
Yeah, it's supposed to be very lovely around here.
It is going to be very lovely. So have that lovely weekend.
We may see you somewhere.
All right. Greg, you have a lovely weekend.
You as well.
10 o'clock with see Matt Nair on air. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Pat Wrightlow. See you Monday.